couple of things I would like to talk with you about a little bit. The standard end of retreat encouragements. I would ask you to... I was thinking about this earlier. There are two things, of course, that I... Many of you who have had more than one conversation with me know, I always start a question, start a conversation by asking how you're doing. And at first people say, fine. And then they begin to catch on that that's not what I'm asking. I don't want to hear it's fine. I want to know how you're doing. The second thing is always in the conversation with take good care of yourself. That's not just a pleasant thing that I like to say to people when they're leaving the room. I mean that. I hope that you will take good care of yourselves. We can only truly take care of ourselves from this place. From anywhere else, we can indulge ourselves and we can punish ourselves. But we can only really take care of ourselves from that place of compassion that doesn't take us personally. Okay. That's the place that I'm asking you to find, a place that is most compassionate to all, that includes oneself. And as part of that, I would encourage you to be careful about dissipating. Sometimes we don't realize the condition that we've gotten ourselves in on retreat until we have a chance to talk to someone afterwards. Okay. And since you're used to paying attention to yourself, you'll catch right on to that. And there's no harm in it. It's just that you've put so much effort into practicing being really present with yourself that to dissipate that all in a couple of hours of conversation might not be what you choose to do if you know that that's going on. So as you leave, as much as you can to stay quiet and to stay with yourself. Do something kind for yourself this evening. Be a little bit easy on yourself, a little gentle with yourself. I've asked William and Patty if they would take out copies of a little book from our Zen Center called The Key. And if you don't have a copy of that, I would ask you to just take one as a gift from our Zen Center. And in the front of it is our address. And if you're ever in California, I hope that you would look us up and come and sit with us. We're in the process of building a retreat center out there, and we're actually going to, we hope, break ground sometime the early part of this summer. And we're quite excited and enthusiastic about it. And so we would love to invite all of you, each of you, not all of you, each of you. Don't all come as a group, because we would be overwhelmed. But each of you to come and spend time with us there. That's all I have to say about that. So is there anything that you would like to talk about while we have this last little time together? You'll have to meditate again. Something to say from this corner?
Actually, I do have. And actually, it could be a fairly voluminous, or require a fairly voluminous answer, but that wasn't what I was getting at. But.
At least 50 minutes?
I have a habit normally of taking some notes, not a lot of notes, something like this. And at your suggestion at the beginning, I didn't take any notes. And so I was wondering if it makes any sense for you to give a little summary. I mean, I remember the t-shirt, you know.
That's right. Pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. There you are.
Well, maybe something that you thought was more important than other things that have kind of transpired during the past few days.
Uh-huh. And now, obviously, there's nothing more important than paying attention, right?
Okay. Well, it's maybe something that isn't quite as important.
Well, there are some things that that I say almost nonstop. Many of you have noticed that already. Anybody who's spent more than one retreat with me is really onto it. Don't believe anything. Don't take anything personally. Okay? Don't take it personally. What does that mean to you when I say that? What do you think that means?
I think of Data on Star Trek, The New Generation.
Oh, you'll have to help me with that one.
He's become my role model because he's an android and he doesn't have an ego. So he's just continually curious about it. He just sees everything as information. And he's incredibly endearing because of this, even though he doesn't have feelings. But it's so refreshing because he doesn't have an ego. I mean, people can come up and insult him. He'd say, you know, he'd inquire about exactly what the meaning of that was and just be real curious about it. And it's just all information. It's just, you know, he can't take things personally because he's not a person.
Yes. Yes. That's what we're getting at, isn't it? What is his name?
Data.
Data. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Good. Uh-huh. All right. Anybody else? Uh-huh, John.
You said yesterday it's sometimes amazing to discover we're not the center of everyone's universe, which has an aspect of not taking things personally.
Yes. Yes. And I might have followed that with beginning to get a sense of how little concern we have even for those people closest to us. I mean, we think we're the center of the clerk in the grocery store's life. You know, and that that this person was perfectly happy until I came in, and now I've ruined this person's life, and therefore this person is responding this way. And yet when I look at it, when I'm really honest about it, even the people who are closest to me, I spend very little time thinking about, being concerned about. As I go along through my life, I'm not thinking, now what kind of an impact is this going to have on who's life? I'm not thinking about that. I mean, maybe if it's a big thing, if it's a crisis kind of thing, I might think about that. But day to day, I don't think about that. As I'm walking down the hall to brush my teeth, I'm not thinking, when I pass another person, how they're going to feel about how I'm behaving at that time, right? I mean, is this kind of true for everybody? Mm-hmm. Right. And yet, we can look at someone and they don't respond the way we think they should respond, and so we assume that it's us. Right? In fact, I don't even know that they're there. We were talking a little bit about some of the beliefs that we have. That if I really love someone, I should be thinking about them all the time. I should be jealous. I should be worried about how they're feeling about someone else, what they might be doing with someone else. If I never have thought about that, how could I really love that person? Does this fit anybody else's belief system? It's all part of taking it personally. And the more, the closer someone is to us, the more we feel that we should take them personally. It's set up that way. So then when we get to ourselves, how could we not take ourselves personally, for God's sake? How is that possible? It's very relaxing. So just an encouragement that it might be exactly the opposite of what we think. The more we truly love someone, the less personally we will take them. The less our ego and identity needs to be invested in their performance. And that's possible with oneself. See, the more we truly love from a place of compassion, the less invested we are even in our own performance, in meeting our own standards. The more we truly love from a place of compassion, the more we're focused on being, not doing. And so a person is loved because a person is, not because a person does this or that or anything else. A person is loved because a person is lovable, not because they meet my standards. That's true of this person too.
And if we don't love that person, there's something we're doing wrong.
There's something we're doing to keep us from that, yes.
And that's across the board, no matter who it is, what they're doing.
One guesses, yes. And one of the places that I think it would be helpful to look is, what do I think that person is doing? Who do I think that person is? In other words, what am I projecting onto that person? And how do I feel about that within myself? How would I feel about myself if I were doing what I'm projecting that person is doing? I'll have a very good clue about what I find unlovable. Does that make sense?
So that I can have a clue about what you find unlovable?
Yes. Yes, where the lack of love begins. The lack of acceptance, the lack of embracing. If I cannot embrace it in this person, I certainly cannot embrace it in another person. If I can't allow myself that experience, then I can't allow anyone that experience. And if it's something that is so horrendous to me that I can't even acknowledge within myself that I know that experience, then I will surely have to push the other person away, because that person reminds me that I know that experience. So we're very invested in believing that it's them, not me. Yes, I can see it. I can see it because it's true, because it exists. It doesn't have anything to do with me. And I would suggest that it has everything to do with me, that I can only see it because it's in me. So I'm desperately trying to make that other person other, get them away from me. Yes, Rob.
It's the problem for me that separated the person from the act. It's clear that there are people who do things that I would never want to do.
Yes.
Don't identify with doing at all. And what I think happens is I connect the act to the person, and therefore I don't want to have anything to do with that person. So I think, if it's possible to recognize the act is horrendous, maybe horrendous, but the person doing it is not. The person doing it is something separate from what they're doing.
And for me, it's very helpful to realize that even that horrendous act lives within me. Because I could not know that it was horrendous if I weren't experiencing it inside myself as I am experiencing it, and that has to be in quotes, in them. And a very simple example that I can give you of that is we hear of some hideous crime that's been done against a child. And, well, an example, I don't know if you people followed it here, I can't imagine that it didn't get here, but the fellow in California who killed his family by slitting their throats, and including his small children. And when they brought him back, the airplane landed, and waiting at the airport was this huge crowd of people. And as he came off the plane, they began to yell, "Slit his throat, slit his throat." These were very nice people who were horrified by this experience, who couldn't imagine ever doing such a thing, couldn't imagine where a person would be in order to do such a thing. Right. Yeah. And there we are. So, the fact that I don't do something, I consider to be a great gift to me. I don't confuse that with it being to my credit. I'm glad that my addictions run toward chocolate and sugar and not drugs and small children. But I never made the choice. See? And one of the things that I look at with that is realizing in my life, I know this will be shocking for you to hear this, but realizing in my life that there are things that it seems that I cannot stop myself from doing. Do you know that place? And I try really hard. I really am making an effort. And it doesn't seem to work. I get myself in that situation, miraculously, and I keep making the same decision. And so I know the experience of can't stop myself, don't want to, working really hard. making great effort, not being successful. And so I can guess that these other people who do these things that I disapprove of so highly are caught in the same kind of process. I've mentioned this at retreats before, because it's something that's had a profound influence on my life. My mother died when I was 18, and I don't know what other 18-year-olds were like. I've always thought that I was kind of an immature 18. And so I really don't have much of a sense of who she was as a person. I don't have a lot of memories from my childhood, and I just don't have a good idea of who she was. I mean, I know sort of who I thought she was as a child, but I don't know who she was as a person. And one of the clues that I have about her is that, you know the cupboard where the glasses are kept? It's right by the sink. You all grew up in America? Okay. And how you open the cupboard right there and you take the glass out, right? It's right by the sink. And on the door of that cupboard, just down in the, in the bottom corner of it, she had scotch taped this saying that she'd cut out of a magazine or a newspaper or something. And over the years, it kept getting new scotch tapes. And finally, it's just this yellow laminate, peeling. You can get the picture. But every time I opened the cupboard to get out a glass or a cup, I read this thing, because that's the kind of mind that I have. And it said, "Do not despair that you cannot make others as you would wish them to be, since you cannot make yourself as you would wish to be." I thought I would have liked her a lot if I had gotten to know her.
What is it that happens when we seem to be making choices? And you said that we don't, that we are not necessarily by choice, but it's just wasting that.
Yes.
So what is it that we, what is that process when we think we're making a choice to do something? We can go this way, we can go this way, and I choose this way.
It's a funny thing. I love that one. And I would just encourage you to look at it really, really closely. That as much as you agonize over it, in the moment you do whatever you do. And I would suggest that the agonizing is really kind of it's just a mental exercise, something to keep the identity intact. That what really goes on is that a sense of awareness or a sense of knowing or whatever arises within you. Now, you can then have a great debate about that or not. But when you think about breakfast, something probably occurs to you. Okay? Toast. Well, I had toast yesterday. And I bought all that cereal. Maybe I should have cereal. I wonder if there's as much fiber in toast as yada 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 yada. And it's all terribly entertaining, and we think it gives us a feeling of being in charge of our lives. God, I could eat anything in this kitchen. I'm a free person. And then I could sit there and do that, but by God, when I eat, I'll eat whatever it is that I'm eating. Okay? And so to begin to get a sense of that one of the ways, okay, just if you can go with me on this one, without the ability to discriminate and to remember, you couldn't pick yourself out of a crowd. Okay? You wouldn't know which one you were. So those two things enable us to maintain an identity. Right? The thing that makes the identity so concrete for us is this imaginary world that we live in, where I can go off and I can picture all sorts of lives, right? I mean, there I am. In the course of a few minutes, I can imagine eating 15 or 20 breakfasts. Okay? All these are possible for me, right? But the truth of the matter is, there's only the one that I eat. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I would just suggest that while it's very entertaining, it's also a tremendous source of misery. Because, once again, the life that I'm living pales in comparison to the life that I should be living, the life that I could be living. My real life. Okay. It's in here. So just to play with it. See if you can really make a choice. And if you really want to make a choice, I mean, if you really want to push this, then really make a choice. Choose something that you would never choose. Right, just go on to lunch. Could we do that? I hate to miss a meal. I've never been for that fasting stuff. It's too hard. I'm so glad it's not real Buddhist. Okay, so if you really want to make a choice, then you could ask someone else to think of something for you, and then you could choose it. And just one second. Sometime when you have a day off and you don't have a lot of pressure on yourself, practice it. Get up and just do the next thing. Just do the next thing that occurs to you. When something comes into your mind, just do that. And then do the next thing and the next thing. And don't get into these debates. Just do. You know? Yeah. It occurs to you that you need to call and make a dentist appointment. Well, call and make a dentist appointment. And then it occurs to you that you'd like to go work in the garden. So go work in the garden. Okay? Just do the next thing without the debate. See what it feels like. And notice how much of your life operates exactly that way. And the debating all comes afterwards. Yeah, Jen?
For me, being so attached to the way things work out and being right, basically, makes choices so important. Makes that... debate so crucial all the time, because I most of the time can't stand the consequences of not having it turn out right.
Yes.
If I could get past that, it wouldn't matter. I could choose anything.
Well, and of course there are some things about that I would just offer to you to consider. One is, it always turns out right. Mm-hmm. Because, like the breakfast, there isn't an alternative. There is only the way it turns out. It has to be the right way. Can you get a sense of that? I mean, it's only in our imagination that we could come up with another way. Of course it's the right. It's the only way. You see? I mean, it's like the notion of perfect. It's all perfect. Or it's all imperfect. But it's all the same thing. You know, you can call it whatever you want to call it, but there isn't any alternative to what is. This is huge. I hope you're getting a sense of this. Do you know this? Do you know this? I mean, this game that we play endlessly, like, well, okay, that happened, but it could have been that. No, it couldn't have. No, not in any universe is that happening. Okay, the other one, of course, and I know you've heard me go through, this material is worth doing again, you know, that notion of being right. And that as long as you're trying to be right, you're wrong. Wanting to be right is wrong. Being right is wrong. Okay? When you don't mind being wrong, you're right. When you know you're wrong, you're right. The only way to be right is to be wrong.
Paper jam.
And once again, it's extraordinarily relaxing. The pressure is off. Yeah.
That reminds me of a game that I know for people to play with their friends, and that is Write for the Dead. And
I like
whatever
this.
Your friend says, I mean, you decide who is going to be right for that day. Whatever they say, they're right, and you surrender to it. So if it's a day like today, and your friend says, well, it's time to go sledding, and you know, bring up the sled and put it on the hill, well, I mean, that's what you do. You just surrender to it. So, and it really shows you how attached you are to being right. It also shows you how silly the whole thing is.
Still I get this feeling of how terribly attractive it is because I really like to be it.
You want to play on the day that you're right.
Then I'll be illuminated. I won't have to play anymore.
Well, in my line of work, I've observed an interesting thing. And that is that the more I say I don't know, which is a pretty legitimate experience for me, the more people think I know. And if I really get into trying to convince them that I don't know, then they're sure that not only do I know, but I'm withholding it from them. And I suspect this right and wrong business works the same way.
I think that's just one that's so ingrained in all of us.
Yes.
There's a right and there's a wrong way, and we all have this voice. I know I do. It says, whatever you're doing is wrong.
That's right.
There's a better way to do it.
Yes. Yes. And once again, just to begin to play with the notion that that's not so. That there's only the way that it is. Adding right or wrong is, there's an expression in Zen, Nyingma Senzaki was the one who used to say it, that it's like adding legs to a painted snake. I mean, it can be entertaining. Why would you want to do that? And if you did it, you'd think once would be enough. You sort of have the experience after that. And yet we persist in doing it endlessly. And so just to, like with so much of the things that we talk about, just to be open to the possibility that there's nothing going on here other than that I'm entertaining myself. And underneath that, I'm making myself real.
There's all these people out there that say there's a right and wrong way too, and you're doing it wrong. You get a lot of reinforcements.
Absolutely. And yet you can catch on to this game pretty quickly, because the way the game goes is, I'm right. And everyone's playing the same game. So you can know you're wrong. You can know that as far as everyone in this room is concerned, you're wrong. Because I'm right. You're right, right? You're right, right? So, I mean, we're all right. Somebody has to be wrong, right? It's whoever's left, okay? If it's just you and me, then it gets easier to figure out.
So you said we already escaped it?
Well, I'm saying that it's what keeps me the center of the universe. If I didn't have this to do all day long, I might have these periods of time where I forgot that I existed. I would forget that I was the center of the universe. I would forget that my survival is the paramount issue that we're dealing with every second of every day. See? So, in order to make sure that that stays in the front of my awareness, these are the kinds of games that I play with myself. And when there's nobody around, then I have imaginary conversations with people in which I'm explaining how I'm right and they're wrong, right? Or I imagine that somebody's going to come up and then how I'll defend myself and how I'll point out to them how what I'm doing really is the right way to be doing this, even though they're going to assume that it's not right. Is this familiar? Yeah.
So another game where I have imaginary conversations and tell someone something, and they say, oh, yes, you are right.
Yes.
That's even more fun. Not only are you right, but you stated it so cleverly.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know, when we look at these things, we're always looking at this line, right? And so what I would wish for you is that you do begin to see the humor in it, that you see the lightness about all of this. But it's not the same as making fun of someone, okay? Because there's a lot of suffering involved in this. So to have, when we find that part who's so invested in being right, to have compassion for that part. Because, of course, what happened was, when that part was little, it was wrong all the time. And it looked up at these big, tall people, and they were right all the time. And all that little person wanted to do was get big enough to be right all the time. And so we're still doing that. Ignorance, you know, Buddhism, it depends. In Zen, we talk about it as greed, hate, and delusion. I know other types of Buddhism call it something else, but what?
Passion, aggression, and ignorance.
Passion, aggression, and ignorance, right? Sort of the same thing. It is when you begin to catch on to this sort of stuff, and there's a little bit of lightness around it, and you just play with it a little bit. It's amazing that we could hold a notion like right and wrong. That an entire civilization could continue to believe that there is one right way when we have overwhelming evidence every second of the day that that's not true. How could we maintain a belief like that in spite of all of the evidence? I think it suggests a level of insanity. I think that we go beyond ignorance or delusion with that sort of thing. It's pretty astounding. So the next time the right and wrong one comes up, and remember, we live in the world of duality. This is the world of duality. When the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. Egocentricity is very interested in the Buddha mind being lost, right? So we're going to do duality all the time. Pick a duality, and we're going to do it. Name an issue, and we're going to get on one side of it and worry about the other side of it. We're going to cling to this one and push away this one. It's the world of duality. If you spend your time trying to resolve every pair of opposites, you will grow old and die in that pursuit. Or you can get it that that's what's going on. There will always be opposites. You will always be on one side or the other of a duality. Right? You don't need to debate each one. Right and wrong. Ah, right and wrong. Uh-huh. There it is. Good and evil. There it is. Me and you. Us and them. This and that. Which other ones?
Yin and yang.
It'll always be there. When you cling to one, push away the other, the Buddha mind is lost. That's all that's going on. It's as simple as that. There. We just summarized it. I knew we'd get there. Who spoke? Uh-huh.
The last time I saw you, I remember you saying something, and for some reason, I want to hear it again.
I'd like to repeat myself.
You talked in terms of practice from here. You didn't encourage beating, but you also said something about do it soon, that life is, I don't know, do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, just don't dawdle. We all know too much to believe that getting through that list is more important than doing this work. There will always be a list of things to do. Always. There will always be demands and requirements and pressures and people to please and take care of and that sort of thing. Always. Every day will be full of those. If we wait for all of that to get done, to turn our attention to our hearts, to finding that place that is most compassionate for all, once again, we will get old and we will get sick and we will die never having accomplished that. So my encouragement is do that first. Right? Do that first. Make that the first priority of every day. And the rest of it will fall into place. That's worth it? Yeah. Not to turn it into a stick to beat yourself with. Don't make your spiritual practice another should in your life. Because, you know, I've told you often, everything on the should column means it's not going to happen. Everything on the want to column will get done sooner or later. We always do what we want to do. And unfortunately, what most of us want to do is beat ourselves. What most of us want to do is remain victims and not grow up and not take responsibility and not find the peace and joy and freedom that is our birthright. Sadly, most of us want that. And so, if you really decided that you want the compassion and the peace and the joy and the freedom, then make a decision for that. And it goes without saying, one cannot beat oneself into an experience of compassion, joy, and freedom.
Sure, you have a catchy definition for should that I forgot.
For should.
You forgot it.
I have.
This is one in the key.
I'll look it up later.
Well, I can think of some of them, you know, like fair is what I want, and ones like that. Should is just escaping me. Gosh.
You should remember that.
I should. God, I hate to be wrong.
Well, it's stuck with me. It's should is illusion of fantasizing.
Ah. Yes.
That's right.
You're right!
She doesn't know everything. She's right.
Yes, that's a good one. I even have a bumper sticker that says that. I have that on a t-shirt, though. Why not? Should is illusion fantasizing. Yes. Yeah. That's good. Thank you, Mary. Yeah. Yeah. When we're into should, I mean, we're so far gone into the realm of ignorance and delusion that accomplishing whatever it is that we should accomplish is just, I mean, here it is. It utterly misses the point. Just drop it. Get to the nearest cushion, sit down, and get somewhere near here and start over again. It's the wrong trail. All right. Well, I will tell you that I have loved being here. I always love being here. But it feels like either I'm more present to this experience of loving being here, or I'm loving being here more. I can't tell which. I don't care. I'm just having a great time. And so I have appreciated each one of you and the time I've had with you. I hope it has been a good retreat for you as well. If it hasn't, of course, you'll have to take responsibility for that and own what you've projected onto other people and deal with that and resolve it and let go of your own suffering. So you see, you can't lose here. This is definitely a win-win situation. I will not see you again because I don't enjoy retreats once the silence has been broken. And I say that to you now because I found out in the past that when I just disappear, sometimes people take it personally. I don't want you to take that personally. There's that. I hope you enjoy the rest of your retreat. And do you have some final Southern Dharma things for us? Oh, excuse me.
When are you coming back? Is it this fall?
Yes, I'll be back in September. Okay. And I can't remember what the dates are, but sometime in September. Yeah.
Early September.
Yeah. Good. All right. So, William, did you have?
Yeah, just a couple of things. First of all, from the staff volunteers, we'd like to thank you for coming. We enjoyed serving you very much. And we do hope you will come back. We very much appreciate the help that volunteers in the kitchen gave in cleaning up and things like that. And, we also received a lot of benefit from your meditative work. That certainly goes a long way to getting everything cleaned up. And certainly you're welcome to do a 4-hour session after the retreat is over. No extra fee.
And we would like to thank you people too for wonderful meals and great organization, and the place just looks superb, and so it's really delightful to be here for us.
We're glad to have the opportunity to be
good.
Along that line also, there are evaluation forms like it filling out if you don't have one, then we have some down on the table. By the bulletin board where the brochures are, and the new friends newsletter is there also. We've opened up the book library if you'd like to browse there. We have a tape library and video library also. There are also, if you have some time and want to stick around a little bit, there's some great walks up here. There's a walk to the top of the ridge here that's really very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
Be careful on your way down.
Most of you know that Sherry is not, there's no fee that, it's not part of the registration fee for the retreat. The word that we use here is our Pali word dana, which is heartfelt giving. Generosity, the point is to keep the teachings going, basically. And Sherry's side of that is giving the teachings. Our side of that is looking inside and pulling up some contribution to aid the work.
There's a basket on the table there with the brochures. If you want to give for that. Yeah, we did take 2 hours here last night and this morning, and we'll be glad to get you copies of that if you'd like them. We also have a resource file that's down near the brochures, also on the floor in the file baskets. Other sitting groups, communities, etc. And please feel free to browse through that. We do have openings for volunteers if you want to work a retreat sometime between now and September. Akron, yeah. I said, in India that means yes. But you know, working in the kitchen, whatever. There are slots there if you'd like to do that. We also, you know, if you'd like to come up and do a private retreat, certainly there's lots of open opportunities for that also. We have just a couple of housekeeping requests. If you use towel sheets, if you could take them down to the washing machine in the kitchen, it'd be very appreciative. And any trash that might be in the room, if you could just take it to the end of the hall on the second floor there by the steps and put it in the large receptacle, that would help a lot also. And check around meditation hall and the other common areas, make sure you haven't left any personal effects that you might miss later on. And let's see. That's just about it. Oh, we do. Most people have experienced, everybody's experienced this really, one condition or another. And the raffle that we concluded at the beginning of this retreat was, the point was to get enough money together to do something substantial so that the road doesn't continue to degrade in bad weather. And we do what we can in terms of registration fees to operate at basically a flat line. We want to keep costs low and at the same time provide a decent service. So we don't have a lot left over to put into tremendous efforts like that. So if you feel it's a good cause, there's also another container down there next to the Donna basket. If you feel that you can contribute, we sure appreciate it. We're looking at a bottom line of about $11,000 to put it together so that it's seasonably maintainable. At this point, we've got enough to dress it up a little bit. That will last through the summer. Anyway, that's our goal. And again, thank you for coming and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.